From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, July 28th, 2020. Two more people have died in Maine from COVID-19. For a total of 121, the state is also reporting six new cases today. Authorities have increased monitoring in waters near yesterday's fatal shark attack off the coast of Harpswell, but the Maine Marine Patrol says the monitoring hasn't turned up any other sharks, and it's reminding people that this was an isolated incident and the first fatal shark attack in state history. 63-year-old Julie D'Imperio Hollowack of New York City was killed in the attack. We'll have more on this in a moment. And the Penobscot Nation is coming out in opposition to Central Maine Power's proposed transmission line through Maine's western woods. Fred Bever has details.
The Penobscot Nation's Natural Resources Director, John Banks, says the tribe is in solidarity with Canada's Innu Nation, whose lands in Labrador have been damaged by decades of flooding to serve energy projects by Hydro-Québec.
We know what it's like to have lands flooded and destroyed. That has happened to us in the past.
The CMP project would carry electricity from Hydro-Québec facilities into New England to serve a contract with Massachusetts utilities. Banks says Innu Nation officials approached the Penobscots recently to seek their assistance. And he says today's heightened awareness of environmental injustices that disproportionately affect non-white communities could help the tribes make the case.
A lot of attention on the issue following the police brutality of George Floyd. And that's good that these things are becoming more and more aware. But the tribes have been going through this, you know, for thousands of years right here in Maine and in Canada.
Penobscot Chief Kirk Francis sent a letter to the Army Corps of Engineers last week demanding that as it considers a permit for the CMP project, the agency require a comprehensive environmental impact statement that analyzes the effects in Maine and across the border. He says precedent shows that federal regulators can and should consider the transnational effects of major infrastructure projects. Army Corps officials say they received the tribe's letter and will respond to it after review. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
In weather tonight, storm ending in the east with skies gradually clearing and lows tonight in the high 50s to the mid-60s. Authorities confirmed today that a New York City woman was attacked and killed by a great white shark off the coast of Harpswell earlier this week. It's the first recorded fatal shark attack in the state's history. Robbie Feinberg has more.
Maine Department of Marine Resources Commissioner Patrick Kelleher identified the victim as 63-year-old Julie D'Imperio Hollowack of New York City, who was swimming in a wetsuit with her daughter about 60 feet off the shores of Bailey Island when she was attacked by a great white shark. Kayakers spotted them and quickly paddled out and brought Hollowack to shore, where she was pronounced dead.
You know, in the face of that type of situation, the fact that they were able to kayak into that area and help bring the body back to shore was nothing more than miraculous, and we certainly thank them, sincerely thank them.
Kelleher says the agency consulted with Greg Scomel, a shark expert in Massachusetts, and recovered a fragment of a tooth.
And with that fragment, Mr. Scomel was able to positively identify this as a great white shark.
Kelleher says Hollowack was wearing a wetsuit, which could have made her resemble a seal. Hollowack was well known to the local community, says Maine Marine Patrol Major Robert Beal, and her family would spend 4 or 5 months each year at their property nearby.
And that, in fact, Julie and her husband are just well-known, very respected individuals, and the community is really at a tough juncture in trying to process yesterday's event.
Nothing like that's ever happened anywhere in Maine, I guess, or especially not so close to home.
Kathy Piffath is the co-owner of H2 Outfitters, a tour and kayak rental service on nearby Oars Island.
Nobody really knew what to think, and it's put a damper on things and still kind of digesting all the information.
Piffath says she was in the water, teaching a class, when she heard sirens on Monday. She says when she got to the scene of the attack later that afternoon, she learned that her company had rented a tandem kayak to the two nearby rescuers who brought Hollowack to shore.
You know, you never know how people are going to react in a situation like that, if you freeze or if you act, and they just immediately acted. They thought that they just had to do something, and they just had to get her to shore, so they couldn't it wasn't worth trying to get her up onto the kayak, but the woman in the front of the kayak grabbed the woman in the water's hand, and she, like I said, held her head up, and they paddled the boat right into the shore.
Her co-owner, Jeff Cooper, says he quickly headed down to local Cedar Beach to alert local swimmers and get them quickly out of the water. He says his company decided to cancel any rentals on Tuesday and also decided to move its local day camp onto land for the time being.
And common sense would say that if there's a predator on the loose in its own environment, we need to be aware of that and respectful of it to a high degree. And that, I think that means changing the protocols of what goes on.
While state authorities stressed that the attack was rare, they've also increased monitoring in the area and have yet to see any sharks. The Department of Marine Resources is urging anyone in the water in the Casco Bay region to avoid areas with seals and schools of fish, which can attract sharks. And the state's agriculture department is also restricting swimming at all of the state park beaches to waist level or below. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And for some more context on this very unusual event, we spoke with Nick Whitney. He's senior scientist and chair of the Fisheries Science and Emerging Technologies Program with the New England Aquarium in Boston. He says one major reason there are likely to be more sharks off Maine's waters is because there is more prey.
I think it's generally accepted that the increase in number of seals is leading to more white sharks coming closer to shore during some months. Other than that, I'm not sure if there's been any major changes in migration patterns. Sharks have probably been using these waters for decades or longer.
Is there anything pointing to a reason why this shark was there?
Maine's coastal waters have plenty of seals. Seals are a major prey item for white sharks. And so when you have prey items around, that's going to attract the predators.
Sharks also have certain habits in terms of how they hunt and their life cycles that might possibly have contributed to this, correct?
The assumption in these waters is that if it was a large shark that bit the person, that it was probably a white shark. And we know that white sharks tend to move into this area more commonly in the summer months. Every year they tend to peak, at least around Cape Cod, they'll peak in August, September, and then start to move south as the waters get cooler. So it is a normal part of the shark's movement cycle to be up in these waters at these times.
And how might we anticipate reducing interaction between humans and sharks if that trend does continue and we do see more sharks in Maine waters?
I think it's just something where people just need to be more aware of their surroundings and just recognize that there's a risk. If you're going to the water in an area where there are seals, and especially if it's in the summer months when we know white sharks are more likely to be around, there's going to be the possibility, as rare and unusual as it is, there is going to be the possibility that you encounter a shark. You know, at the New England Aquarium, we study a number of shark species in the local waters here. White sharks aren't the only species that are around. Most of our research involves studying the impact of humans on sharks and the impact of fisheries. Even though it's always a tragedy when something like this happens, a shark bite on a person, overall the number of sharks that are killed by humans every year just drastically outnumbers the number of humans that are bitten by sharks.
So you feel we should keep the beaches open?
That's always a matter of the individual beach and the public safety officials there. I think it is a good idea to do what they normally do, which is close a beach in the immediate aftermath of a bite. But there's no indication that a shark who bit a person is going to be around in that same area a day later or certainly several days later. People used to believe that sharks were incredibly territorial and would stake out a beach. And if someone was bitten off that beach, that fishermen needed to go out there and catch and kill every shark they could in the hopes of getting the culprit shark. Now we know that that's not the case at all. The shark that bit a person is likely tens, if not hundreds of miles away within, you know, the next day or two after the bite. So very little evidence that it helps at all to go out and catch sharks after an attack.
Nick Whitney, senior scientist and chair of the Fisheries Science and Emerging Technologies Program with the New England Aquarium in Boston. Nick, thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Colby College has completed a survey of 888 likely Maine voters on a range of questions, including the presidential race and the hotly contested U.S. Senate race in Maine. Mal Leary spoke with Colby College government professor Dan Shea about some of the key findings.
We have Joe Biden winning by at least statewide by 11 points at this point, but only by 3 points in the second congressional district. So that's within the margin of error. I think the president's team, their efforts to visit the state, to open an operation, to expand fishing grounds, are all play for voters in the second district, and it may work. It's going to be tight up there. My guess is that it'll be a nail-biter in the second district this time, just like 4 years ago.
And how does this interplay the presidential race, interplay with the Senate race, which is probably more closely watched in our state than the presidential race right now, with all the polling so far showing a very close race between Democrat Sarah Gideon and Republican Susan Collins, even though there are two independents in the race as well.
Right. Well, one of the important differences about our poll this time, and what might be different than other polls that are being conducted, is we really zeroed in on likely voters. Right? It's not just registered voters, but we talk to people on the phone and online that are likely to come out, very likely to come out in the election. And when we did that, we find that Senator Collins is at 39% reelect and Sarah Gideon at 44%. So there's a 5-point split there. That's a bit of a number, right? So it's fair to say that Sarah Gideon is winning the race at this point. Senator Collins is a strong campaigner. She's done a lot for the state. She's not done. There's a long way to go, nearly 100 days. And that's another race, I think, that'll come down to the wire. Actually, Mal, I think if you look at our data, the key, it seems to be for Gideon and her campaign, will be turning out younger voters. What we find is that the senator's support among those under 50 is really quite soft. On the other hand, Gideon's getting a lot of help from voters under 50. And if we overlay, just one quick second, if you don't mind, if we overlay gender on top of that, it's really significant. Senator Collins, right now, there are a lot of undecided, but right now only 27% of women under 50 have said they'll vote for Senator Collins. It's 55% for Sarah Gideon. So those are tough numbers for the senator. But as I said, turnout is going to be really important in this race.
And we have to bring in ranked choice voting here, because those two independents could have a marginal impact if the race tightens up even more.
Yes, I suspect in a really tight race with a few minor party candidates, that will come down to, once again, ranked choice voting, that there won't be a clear majority winner. How that will shake down is anybody's guess at this point. My suspicion is that there'll be, as this race becomes really tight and high profile in the coming months, there'll be a lot of voters that move to the two major party candidates. But even so, you're right, Mal. It could come down to tabulating those second and third choices.
What also appears to be pretty soft for Collins is her longtime brand, if you will, of being independent-minded. I mean, you've got some questions in this survey that show that people no longer look upon her as being that independent-minded.
Yeah, we wanted to get at, so here's one of the great questions about this race. So Senator Collins was reelected 6 years ago with 69% of the vote, right? Shana Bellows was a strong candidate, maybe not super well-funded, but a strong candidate, strong state legislator. But Senator Collins won with 69% of the vote. What's happened? So we spent a lot of time in the survey trying to tease out what's going on. And one of the questions we asked is the extent to which the respondent sees the senator as independent, as open-minded. And here again, we see some really important differences based upon age. 50% of voters or respondents under 45, so 50% under 45, believe the senator always sides with Republicans and is not independent-minded. That drops to about 30 and 35% for older voters, But anyone under 50 in the state does not see her as a maverick, as a centrist, as independent-minded. I should say half of them don't, and that's quite a hit to her brand as a centrist, as a moderate. Conversely, only about 10% of the voters overall, maybe 15% of the voters overall, think she is truly an independent sort of a senator, not linked to any of the parties, either of the parties.
And that was Maine Public Radio senior political reporter Mal Leary speaking with Colby College government professor Dan Shea about a new poll that's been released on a range of issues, including the top political races. The survey was conducted last week and has a margin of error of 3.9%, and we'll have more on the findings in the coming days. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. I'm Nora Flaherty.